Now, if you heard the show this week, you might have heard David and Helen Smallbone, parents of For King and Country and Rebecca St. James.
They're the ones that sounded like this.
Not quite like that. They sounded better. They sounded authentic.
Wait, let me see if I can do it. Down under.
Don't do that.
Kangaroo.
And what you missed.
So awful.
If you heard the show and you heard the interview, you missed a lot. They were here. We talked for some 20 minutes, and it's just beautiful to see who they are and what they're about. And you can truly see that God's blessed their lives. And without further ado, the entire unedited conversation with David and Helen Smallbone.
I wanted to start here with the film with you guys. First of all, it's fantastic. Thank you for being willing to share your story. But I really want to know, if you didn't have to pick your son Joel to play you, who would you actually have picked to play you in this film? Because he does a fantastic job. So let's start right there. It's terrific. No change needed. But who'd you really want?
Well, the thing about Helen and I, we go to one movie a year. We're not really movie people. We've lived in music world for, well, when we met, I was working for a book publisher. And then a year and a half after that, I went to work for a record label. So this is all she's known, is the craziness of music business, both mainstream and Christian. So our kids are more into film than we are, but we're Aussie, you know, so we're kind of Australians to a fault. But maybe Mel Gibson.
But then again,
he is of increased vintage, so he probably wouldn't have been able. Maybe Mel Gibson 20, 30 years ago.
Okay,
yes, I love it.
But you know, interesting about Mel Gibson, they just did a pseudo premiere in LA last week. He turned up.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he's best friends with the director of photography, Johnny Durango, who's just a wonderful guy.
So awesome.
And Johnny does photography on his movies, and he came there. And I think it was a bit of a shot in the arm for Joel, because Joel is my he's my film enthusiast.
Mm-hmm.
Luke is the big picture guy, and it was Luke who came up with the idea to do the movie.
Okay.
Because he has presented compassion for the last 12 years, and it's hit a nerve to the point that it's there. The number of children they got the last financial year was the most ever for Compassion International, which said that the story connects. But it they're so good for each other, mm-hmm. those two. You know, like Luke's tends to be more introverted, Joel more extroverted. You put them together, it's For King and Country. And we were only going to have four kids, and I went to my beloved here, the lady to my left, who, can you believe, I'm still madly in love with after 52 years, and said, hey, baby, the kids are such good therapy for me. Could we continue to have more than four? And she said, she surprised me and said yes. And so had we not done that, there'd be no For King Country, there'd just be For King, and that wouldn't be too pretty, guys. Hey, you better ask my beloved a question or else I'll be in trouble. Because
right?
Sometimes I'm verbose to a fault. You don't know that about me, do you?
It was just interesting to hear that the movie was the younger's idea. Usually the older brother has the idea, the younger brother does the thing, and the third born gets blamed for it.
Yeah.
So
that's a third born.
I've experienced
speaking.
That.
Yeah,
I've experienced that a lot.
That comes from a bloke who had eight siblings. So yeah. You know, like he had more siblings than our kids even had. Like you win. You get the award.
Your kids are therapy for you. My siblings are not that for me.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor man. You've had it tough.
Yeah.
Compassion, please, for the young
right?
bloke.
I did want to. So you mentioned let's bring Helen in. So Helen, I did want to ask you about a specific scene in the film. I mm-hmm. hear. I mean, listen, violence is part of life.
Whoa!
I hear there's a slap.
There is a slap.
What happened?
It was fairly controversial.
What'd he do?
The slap. Well,
they almost edited it out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
They actually filmed that scene with the slap and without the slap.
Okay.
Because they did not wish to portray, like, domestic violence mm-hmm. per se. Mm-hmm. And so they did film it both ways. And then they sought wise counsel. They showed the slap scene to some pastors and some, you know, sort of accountability partners and said, slap in, slap out. And it came back unanimous that
really?
The slap should be in. It was actually, again, Luke who said the slap should be in. He was the one who went to these other people and said the slap should be there. They had the liberty to put the slap in because I'd have slapped David once in my life in our married life, and it was very much earlier in marriage. I'm not sure, like, when we came to America, we'd been married 16 years. I'm not sure at that length of time of marriage you would really do, I mean, you would really do it. Though, the movie has us at our extremes, at extreme places, you know, stress. And so I think it fits very well. But we were much younger married. David is a little bit of a workaholic. And I was at home with two kids, and he was traveling into the city, so 40, 50 minutes away. And this is, younger people can't understand what our life was back then. There's no microwaves to heat up dinners. There's no phones to know where people are. There's no find my friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you've got no idea. And so my frustration at being told I'll be home at 6 and I hold dinner even with the kids, and then 6:30 comes. So then the kids are really wanting to eat. So I feed the kids, and then I'm like, do I eat? Do I not eat? And that dilemma going on day after day, I didn't feel heard. Mm. I didn't feel heard, nor did I feel understood. So I thought maybe the slap would get his attention to realize that I'm really doing it tough, not knowing. I'm not sure
it really does. It was calculated, though. You weighed your options.
There were reasons.
God knew my frustration, though. Yeah. So I will say, these days, if I was that tense about something, I would pray about what to do in that scenario. But David started working from home not long after that. And that, I grew up in a pastor's home. We had the parsonage next door to the church. Like, Dad worked from home. His office was in the home. I was familiar with that. And so once he started working from home, it all dissipated, and I was as happy as anything.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Mm-hmm.
Did you have to reenact it a bunch so they knew how to do it?
Yeah. Actually, Joel didn't know it was coming. So it was even better done. Yes. So I think Luke had already perceived that scene was so emotional and so tense that it seemed to be a good flow on. And he had gone to Daisy, who played me, and said, I want a slap in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe Joel knew that it was a possibility, but he didn't know that that was going to be the cut that did it.
Wowzers.
Ooh. I feel like Luke got back at a Big Brother there too.
Yeah. For
a
second. Maybe.
Maybe just for a moment.
He's like, maybe if you wear brass knuckles next time. Just really.
No. But Helen, a little bit more about you. We know that you have a book, you have a podcast. A lot of it's towards women and mm-hmm. being a mother. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that obviously is the soul of this movie too. So how do you see all three of those kind of overlapping with your passions and heart for ministry?
I think God's been very kind to me. I am a behind the scenes person. It is my sweet spot. Like, being out in the public image is sort of a bit of a stretch for me. So God has led me gently for the last maybe close to 15 years. Once sort of the kids were starting to be grown, I had more free time. I was very sort of not ashamed, but I felt I'd neglected the church and being able to add support in an area, but we traveled so much. We just couldn't take on a leadership role. And then someone came to me and asked, would I be their mentor? And it was a sweet spot of mine. And then our church was involved with a women's group that is a mentoring group. Though you have one senior mum with a table of 8 mums at it. And again, just my sweet spot, mm-hmm. coming alongside mums. I have a passion for motherhood, which, I mean, I consider myself maybe a professional mum because I've been, I mean, 7 kids is not, you know, a walk in the park. And then we homeschooled mm-hmm. since we came to America. Mm-hmm. So there's about 20 years of homeschooling, about 32 years of actual active mothering, not doing anything else, just full-time mothering. And so when I got into this mentoring role with younger mums, I realized this is a heart passion for me. And supporting women maybe to a lesser extent because mums has been my total focus. And now I've been able to do a podcast that is for mum. We set up a new nonprofit called Mum Life Community, where the mum in Mum Life stands for Mothers Uplifting Mothers.
Wow. Mm.
And that's my heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful.
That's awesome. As a mom, Mother's Day is coming up with so many kids in the home. I grew up in a family of 9. I have 8 brothers and sisters, so it's a little noisy. what in your, at least from your perspective and your experience, what was maybe the best thing about raising little kids and maybe most difficult, and then also weighted on the other side, the best part about raising older kids and maybe the more difficult part of that.
I've realized with a lot of mums, I think you can, mums will know what I'm talking about. I think there are baby mamas that just love the little baby. Mm-hmm. I am not a baby mama. I've had 7 kids and I like babies, but I'm not a baby mama.
You've had that experience once and you're like,
yeah. You know what? And once I'm gone through the baby stage, I'm like, yes. So I love the toddler up. Once they start having that personality, wandering around, doing funny things, that strikes my heart into a deep way. And frankly, I've been able to continue that through. I like the progression into shaping a child into someone you like. I'm not questioning love. I'm mm-hmm. questioning mm-hmm. sometimes mm-hmm. we don't like our kids or possibly who we think they may be becoming. And I think that's God saying we've got more work, like we need to be spending some more time or changing our strategy a little if you don't like your kids. I felt, and I think it's been confirmed, that those first 5 years of life are so important for pouring, and it's a very physical time. It's a very where you need to be consistent, where you need to just sow into who they're becoming. Once you lay a foundation, I think then you sort of just growing it, if you get what I mean, over time, the dynamic changes. I find parenting in a way, because you never really stop, the adult kids actually a bit harder. So the younger kids are physically demanding, that sort of lessens maybe as time goes on. And then as they get older, it becomes more emotionally demanding. Mm-hmm. And I think emotionally demanding is much more tiring in a way. So latter years, our age range now is from 46 down to 32. So they're very much in their, you know, high adult years. We have 15 and a half grandchildren. Our family is now one of 30 and a half.
Wow.
So we are quite the size. These days, I think the biggest gift as a more senior mum, but it may be all the way through, that I can give my kids or our kids and our grandchildren is prayer. Mm. So David and I every night have taken into for the last 4 years this consistent habit of going up to our room around 9 o'clock, downloading about our days, because a lot of times we're doing different things, and then praying. And we pray first for our children, grandchildren, then we go on to extended family, and then we go on to friends who are doing it tough. And it has become such a bonding time between David and me. And we received that. Both David and I came from Christian homes where we had praying parents, and now we're the next to pass on, so to speak.
Oh, jeez.
Whoa. Took a turn. Real interesting turn.
Yeah, we've stepped into our matriarch and patriarchy years where we're the oldest in our family, and I want to give that same gift to our kids and grandkids.
That's beautiful.
Well, wow. David, I know Helen mentioned 30-some-odd members of the family, which is true. I'm not going to tell you she's wrong, but also you have all the animals.
Yeah. And there's about 250 of those.
Okay.
And my love language is I pay for all the food uncomplainingly, and every night I put away all the ducks, guinea, and chickens, and there's a couple hundred of those. And interestingly enough, that's my therapy.
Really?
My therapy, when the kids were younger, I'd put them down to bed every night. I'd pray with them. We'd talk about issues at school, whatever, sing to them. Mm. And that was wonderful therapy for me. And I think one of the things, she didn't like it. She wanted to go to bed and get sleep. So I would put the kids down. And so that's been an interesting moment. Anyway, you had
that was part of it. The other thing, like, what's a guinea fowl?
Yeah.
Well, guineas are an African bird, and we lost a llama. What do you reckon, Darl? 4 or 5 years ago? And, we did some research, and they said, well, the llama died from a parasite from deer's droppings. This is what you want to hear at breakfast time.
That's all right.
and the way to get rid of the parasites is either poison once a month or get guinea. So we went and got guinea, and now we haven't had any llamas die. We've got half a dozen alpacas, which are a relation to the llama. We've got half a dozen there now. And they're stupid, but they're the most they bring so much personality. They wander all over the farm. We've got about 30, 40 acres or something. They wander all over the farm doing their job of eating the parasites, eating the ticks. I don't know. I just love our farm. Like, the music business is crazy. You know, like, just drives me sometimes it drives me crazy. I love the ideal of sharing the hope in Jesus through music, but it's almost like I need that therapy. So my two therapy moments each day are what Helen just told you about, praying at the end of the day and then putting away the animals. And I just love being close to God's wonderful nature. I want to say something to you guys. I love it. Emotional for me to say this. I love it that you're committed every day to doing what you do. Our core principles with For King Country, loving on the brokenhearted and sharing the most wonderful message known to man to as many people as possible. And you do it daily. We go out on the weekends and do shows and stuff like that, but we're not in the same town. We have a wider community. But you guys doing what you do, it gladdens this old man's heart. I'm 74. For those who don't know what a score is, that's I'm 74.
Okay.
Seen a lot of life. And when I see people committed to sharing this wonderful message, so gladdens my heart. So thank you for encouraging a gentleman of increased vintage today.
I'm just here for the coffee. So,
well, speaking of For King and Country's message and then bringing it back to Unsung Hero, when you think about somebody sitting and watching the movie for the first time, whether they are a believer or not, what is the message or encouragement in Christ that you want them to receive?
I think we've been pretty impressed that the movie actually relates to everybody. We've seen people who are non-Christians. There was early on, when you produce a movie, you actually get like a rating, and it has to be done from Hollywood. So they send out a guy. They choose an audience. They watch a screening of the movie. It's an early edit. And then they interview the people. They have this special way. I don't understand how they do it, but they have this special way of giving every movie a rating, a percentage out of. And so we came in at 98, which is extremely high.
Yeah.
But the guy who does it is not following our lifestyle. Mm. And when he finished watching the movie the first night, he actually had to leave the room and compose himself before he came back in. And I just thought, wow, if it can reach people because that aren't even believers with a message of being, you know, in marriages, in crisis, working together and not maybe against one another. And then as a family, the cohesiveness of family. And what I realized, we've had a lot of people who are immigrants who have come up and said, oh gosh, I've lived your story. You know, like as an immigrant coming, you come with nothing. You're starting totally over. Then you've got each one of us is a part of a family. We're either a son, a brother, a sister, a mom, dad, you know, we're there. We're a daughter, a son. And I think the message is very strongly family and incorporating faith and family unity and working together as a family. And I think it challenges us all to go home and hopefully make some changes. My prayer, I think, really is that it will touch people to a deep place and that they will take it home into their homes. God will use it to make some change, because if you look at our marriages and our families, we are really under attack and they're under stress. And I hope this movie encourages people to really grow.
It's awesome.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I can't wait to watch it.
I know. It's also great. We are so thankful for getting some time with you, because I know probably everywhere you go, everybody wants a piece of your time. And so that you would share some with us, we are honored and we're excited to show the movie off. And thank you for being willing to share your story here and in the film. It's big.
Can I just finish with one thing?
Yeah.
Something that really challenged me a little while ago, we're talking about this whole thing, and I don't know how it came, but maybe it was at church on Sunday, but I heard this verse from James 1 and said, need a miracle, ask God. And that's what happened to us. We needed miracles to survive, because I came over to work for somebody, he let me go after 2 months, and we lived in poverty for that first 2 years, and we saw a miracle a week. Mm. And so now we're apologists for God's economy. So I say that there's probably going to be somebody listening, doing it tough. We were pretty broken at that time. I was pretty broken. Helen's very constant. She was she knew God had a plan, but I was knocked over. Interesting comment about that is I was around 42 at the time, and that is exactly the age that my mom had a nervous breakdown. She loved me when my self-worth was at an all-time low. Had she not done that, I would have had a nervous breakdown. So my other comment is to ladies out there, if your husband's going through a hard time, encourage him. She encouraged me, and it's allowed us to go out and do some pretty extraordinary things, and we're very grateful. And it was really her love for me when I was broken, and Jesus showing up with a miracle a week, it changed us and has given us a different perspective, and we have joy in the journey because of that incredible experience that we'll never forget.
Now, are you guys going to start a band soon? Or are you next in the family to?
I was in a band when I was 16, but I was the weakest. I was a double bass player. I was the weakest player. So I was the organizer and the promoter, and I ran a coffee shop once a month. And it was that experience that got me into this crazy. And so I've been now around music for 58 years. I'm an artist development guy. I'm always looking, how can we take this phenomenal message wider to more people? And music is a wonderful way to do that.
That's awesome.